This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Boys, this is one of those seasons, you know, nothing went our way early. We battled through injuries.
Yeah.
We grinded. I wasn't even here. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah.
Seventh time. All right? Don't take that for granted. On seven. Everybody pop these.
One, two, three,
Bullpen, ESPN Radio, 97.5 and 92.5. It's, again, the bullpen with the producers here at ESPN Radio. Myself, Brian McDonald, found on the X at Sack by BMAC, flanked by Sean Mapes from the Paul Gallant Show, on Twitter at Sean A. Mapes, and, of course, Andrew Carlson from the new show, Connor and Beard, weekdays 12 to 3. It can be found on the X at Carlson Radio. And our man, Third Coast Johnny, Johnny Belmer, Johnny Two Jobs, Johnny 1,000 nicknames is behind the glass instead of Josh. Josh probably talking to chicks at the Spice Isle, I would assume, right now. That's usually his go-to. But you heard coming in there, in credit to Fox, and credit to Fox for sticking with it, because you could probably have counted the bleeps there. Verlander was letting the F-bombs fly like Astros hitting home runs versus the Rangers back into that September series. They were flowing quite a bit there. So one of the best post game locker room speeches I've ever heard. Maybe that's a little biased coming from an Astros fan, and not that I have a long list saved onto my phone of here is my Mount Rushmore plus one coming up at 1 o'clock of post game locker room speeches. But that Verlander speech, I mean, how can you not listen to that and just be absolutely fired up?
Yeah, no, it was great. It was great when the first S-bomb was dropped and you're like, oh, FS1 really yeah, letting it ride.
And they had no idea what was coming.
And then he dropped an F-bomb and you're like, oh, okay, well, I guess, whatever. And then he just dropped him every other sentence for the rest of the 45 seconds that he was talking. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. It was awesome. Yes, easily a top three speech of all time. You got... I don't know any other speeches, but it was a great speech and really encapsulates what it meant to, or what it felt like being an Astros fan following this team all season, is that, man, they grinded. Justin Verlander wasn't even here for half the season.
Yeah, that was a great line.
And the on seven was a nice little thing.
Yeah.
I like the on
Except
seven.
For the fact the Astros players can't count. They started
going before seven.
One,
yeah.
Two, three, and four. And it's like, hey, guys.
Look, you got guys like Altuve, man. They're not waiting for the fifth pitch. They're jumping on a pitch one.
Or as some of them, it is, they haven't been here for all seven.
That's true.
So they
That's
were
true.
Popping bottles as they got to their
the number.
Oh, yeah. You're giving them a lot of credit there, Sean.
Mauricio Dubon's at two.
Let's stick with Verlander. Of course, the ALCS against the Rangers, the Silver Boot Mega Show, whatever the hell we're going to call this ALCS. It can't be the Silver Boot anymore. It's the ALCS. But starts on Sunday with Justin Verlander against Jordan Montgomery going in game one. And sticking with Verlander, I mean, it feels like, obviously, with this entire rotation, we were dealing with ups and downs the full season. Obviously, Verlander, that was a little bit of a shorter window because he wasn't with the team as long, but he still dealt with a few ups and downs as well. I know he had a 5-run game against at the Miami Marlins, I believe, at the beginning of the month. But his last three starts, he's got a 1.89 ERA. It's not luck because his FIP is 2.15. That's fielding independent pitching, for those who don't know the nerdy stats. And his opponent batting average under 200, opponent slugging or OPS under 500. So Verlander has been pitching really well. His only start against his Rangers the Rangers this year was that beat down in Arlington from earlier in the month. He went seven innings, only gave up one run, got six strikeouts. So I kind of feel like in a season of ups and downs, I'm reaching a point now where my confidence, and it feels funny saying because it's an all-time great, it's a Hall of Famer, Andrew, but it feels like my confidence in an Astros pitcher, specifically Justin Verlander, is an all-time high right now.
Yeah, it may not be at an all-time Justin Verlander with the Astros high, yes, but I agree. For this season, this is about as confident as I believe you can feel about really any Astros pitcher other than Fromber in the early part of the season. Because Fromber was dealing for the first couple months of the year. We were expecting him.
We got to July.
Yeah, and then we got to the doldrums of the season and the wheels fell off for him and a lot of the pitching staff. But yeah, this is the best that Justin Verlander has looked since his return to Houston. And the fact that he has put it together in multiple starts where it means something, because he's been in a playoff-type atmosphere now, because they had the start in Seattle, where he was absolutely fantastic. Then he was great again in Arizona, and now he was really good in the first game against the Twins. Obviously, there was some traffic on the base pass, but once he settled down, he was lights out. And that's going to be the key for Justin throughout his starts, hopefully through two of them in this series, where if he is able to get through some of those early game struggles without getting hit around too much, he's going to knock out, like, he is going to be locked down against the Rangers.
Yeah, I think the perfect way to put it is that it's not an all-time high. It's not all-time Justin Verlander
it's
high.
It's not 2017 yes. ALCS
that,
high.
That guy's not walking through the door. But it is higher than when he was giving up five runs to the Oakland A's. It is higher than that. It's not going to be Justin Verlander where you think, like, oh, yeah, he can go 7-8 innings and then hand the ball off to Abreu and Presley, and we'll get out of there with the win. It is going to have to be a grindy five, maybe six innings for Justin Verlander. Not a lot of strikeouts like back in the old days either. So I do feel confident. Now, this Rangers offense and this Rangers lineup is, like, very formidable, and they seem to be...
It's the most scary part of facing the Rangers.
And they seem to be firing on all cylinders. Now, they did have to wait. They did have to sit for 5 days.
Playoff format talk.
Yeah, maybe if they're as soft as the Braves and Dodgers, maybe they'll just forget how to hit now. That's always a possibility, I guess. But I do think that it will be basically strength against strength right out of the gates with the Texas lineup versus Verlander in game one.
Yeah, and Andrew, you talked about something there about Verlander, how, and you mentioned it, first two innings against the Twins, he had a lot of base runners on. Frankly, a little lucky to get out of those innings without giving up any damage. Got a couple double plays, which he basically never gets. So this does feel like a situation that's cliche. If the Rangers are going to get to Verlander, they're going to have to get to him early. Sean mentioned it. It was noticeable how much he settled down getting out of the third, going into the third and fourth innings. So it feels like we'll know what type of night it's going to be pretty early with Verlander. But, I mean, obviously Verlander's at the top of your confidence list. Going into games two and three, obviously a step down in confidence. But I don't know how – I know Fromber's going to be the game two starter. That's just what it's going to be. But I don't know – and I don't know how you guys feel about this. But I think I'm at the point now where I'll take Fink out of it. I am more confident right now in Christian Javier than Fromber Valdez. And that might be a little, you know, recency bias, a little hot takey, but Javier since the start of September, Fromber since the start of December, Javier has a better fielding independent pitching, number 342 to 375. They both have 40 strikeouts in 30 innings, so that's pretty much the same. But Javier also then has the better opponent's batting average and the better opponent's OPS. And we've got a clip here from Rocco Baldelli, the Twins manager, on what makes Christian Javier so difficult to hit.
We don't see him very often. So he's not a guy that I have a ton of experience watching throw. Obviously, he's a guy that can get his fastball to places that not every pitcher can get to. And I think when he starts using his fastball, which he always does, you start to adjust to the fastball and or try to adjust to the fastball, and that's when his breaking, his slider ends up a weapon. His slider's a weapon because of his fastball. That's kind of the way that it looks as you watch him pitch. And, you know, we had a tough time getting on top of the fastball when we had chances to do so and holding up at the break ball.
So it feels like Javier, while he hasn't regained the form that we saw in last year's postseason, and maybe you want to accredit it to shadows, and the Rangers won't have to deal with shadows inside a dome. or a retractable roof stadium.
The darkness. It's boring.
What, is this a bay?
You
think you love the darkness. I was born in it. Molded by it, Batman. So, I mean, I just think Javier, I mean, one, Fromber and Adam Wainwright did a great job of pointing out how the Twins were getting to him in game two, just constantly yelling at him from the dugout. And we've seen that from Fromber throughout his career, where he just kind of gets shaken and his pitching falls apart. Javier doesn't seem to be as prone to that. And I think he has his... his A game of the fastball and not picking it up and the slider coming off of that, kind of pitching off each other, complementary pitching, if you will, is working better than what Fromber's trying to do right now. So I know Javier is going to be the Game 3 starter, but I honestly have more confidence right now in Christian Javier.
It's very tough for me to say that I have more confidence in Christian Javier, even though the results have been there relatively recently. The problem is he's walking such a fine line in his starts.
Was it five walks in the last outing?
Yeah, he five walks plus a hit batter. So he gave up, I believe, one hit, had five walks, and hit a guy. So that's seven base runners allowed. But he walks such a fine line in his starts, or has so basically for the entirety of the second half of the season, where all it takes is one mistake, and we're talking about a good outing turning into an awful outing very, very quickly. And Fromber, while
there is a lot more, there is some boom bust for sure.
And while I understand that Fromber
also has boom bust.
Fromber is like the epitome of boom or bust right now. So, like, Javier just makes me so nervous, because with a lineup like what the Rangers have, all it would take is one mistake from him, and those guys on second and third are coming home with a 3-run bomb. And we saw that in the middle of the season when Javier was struggling so much. He's been able to avoid some of that really hard contact throughout the last few weeks, but it makes me so, so nervous when he's on the mound, knowing that he's going to put himself in these situations where he has to be a Houdini, to steal a term that I think was used on FS1 like 80 times during his outing, where Fromber, I know when he's at his best, is not going to have us feeling like that. The question is going to be, are we going to get good Fromber, or are we going to get bad Fromber? And unfortunately, it's been a lot more bad Fromber than good Fromber over the last couple of months, and it was much more bad Fromber in his start against the Twins. So can he calm down and get himself in a place mentally where he is able to summon up his best? I don't know, but I think that there's still probably a very biased part of me looking back at last year's postseason run, where I'm saying good Fromber is going to show up at some point. Like, I just still have faith, for whatever reason, that he is going to bring his best against the division rival in the ALCS.
It is just the part that you touched on there at the end, is the like mentality part, the mental side of Fromber Valdez. That's what gives
the undefinable, really. Yeah. Like, you can't predict it. It's literally, that's what makes it so maddening.
Just how does he wake up that day, and then does anything happen during the game?
Order wrong at Chipotle, and it puts him in a spiral.
Does anything happen
sour cream.
Does anything happen during the game that, like, just causes him to disintegrate like that? Because that really is what happens. It is, he kind of pitches pretty well, then like one thing happens and then just snowballs out of control, where at least Javier, it doesn't seem like it is like gets that bad that fast.
Well, he had the foul tip, right? Javier had four outs in one inning, essentially, where like the umpires entirely missed that foul strikeout. Uh-huh. If that happened to Fromber, that's turning into like eight runs. That's turning into
instantly.
8 runs minimum.
He's hitting the next batter, and then there's going to be a double and a home run.
He's starting a fight. Remember what happened? He started a fight, started hitting people against the Rangers. It feels like they both have... Fromber obviously has some legendary moments in the postseason. Game 6 of the ALCS in 2021 against the Red Sox, he was great. He closed it out last year in the World Series. Oh. But Christian Javier has a World Series 6-inning no-hitter. I mean, they both have the highest of highs. They both have the moments of explosion. I just feel like, and I get your point, Andrew, where if Fromber's on his A game, because he gets ground balls against a home run hitting team, you feel like his upper A game is better than Javier's. I just feel like right now, Fromber is missing the strike zone so much, and I know Javier's walked five batters, so there's a lot of tough comparisons to make, but it feels like offensive players and other teams are sitting on certain pitches from Fromber, making him come up in the zone to them, and when he comes up in the zone, he gets hammered, whereas Javier can go up in the zone with his fastball and then the slider off of it, and I think fool people a little bit easier right now.
It's crazier to say the floor is probably lower with a Fromber performance that, than it kind is of with my a Javier feeling, yeah. performance.
And, and that's why I kind of like starting him in game two, where you're already not that good of a home team. So might as well like just swing for the fences and then have a more stable rotation when you go on the road. And for whatever reason, you start playing better.
Yeah, stable. Jose Urquidy, baby.
That is me and Dusty playing six-dimensional chess.
Yeah,
though,
yeah,
but,
yeah.
But that, for some weird logic, that kind of makes sense in my brain as far as like, yeah, just go with super high variance in games you struggle to win, frankly,
yeah, home,
inexplicably.
Clearly. Yeah.
And then go a little bit lower variance. We're still talking about Christian Javier here in the road games.
All right. We got more on the Astros to get into. I want to have a conversation about Jose Urquidy and his importance in this upcoming series. If you want to join in on the conversation about the Astros, later on we'll get into the Texans and how great C.J. Stroud has been. Give us a call on the HRMP listener line at 713-780-3776. Find us on Twitter again. I am at Sack by BMAC. Sean is at Sean A. Mapes. Andrew is at Carlson Radio. And our man behind the glass, Johnny Bilmer, is at Third Coast Johnny. Coming up next again, Astros conversation, Jose Urquidy. Is he maybe the most important pitcher in the series? We'll have that conversation next on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. We keep getting away with it.
I want the ball! Give me the ball!
Well, hey, man, they know us, and we know them. And I know Bruce, and he knows me. And I know Mike Maddox, and hey, it's going to be a heck of a series.
This is The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio, welcome back into The Bullpen with the producers here of ESPN Radio. Myself, Brian McDonald. Sean Mapes, Andrew Carlson, our man Johnny behind the glass. That was, the voice of Dusty Baker, the Astros manager, with Tom Verducci just mentioning, I mean, these teams having played 13 times in the regular season, obviously not playing as much as they used to. I think the old format was 18 or 19 times a season. But either way, these teams know each other. There are no secrets. We're not going to have a situation like Rocco Baldelli talked about in the last segment on Christian Javier, where they didn't really see him much. They didn't really know, other than I guess Correa could fill them in, they didn't really know his style of pitching all that well. Well, the Rangers are going to know what you have and what you don't have because they've seen you a bunch. And this segment, I wanted to get into a few more notes on the Astros pitching rotation. We talked about Fromber and Verlander and Javier in this last segment, talking Jose Urquidy here. Andrew, I'm going to let you take the floor here for a second because I know you were in our last show there out at Gulf Coast Chevy in Angleton.
Jose Urquidy fan club.
You were
baby.
Jose Urquidy, yeah. the leader, the president of the Jose Urquidy fan club.
Handing out flyers.
Handing out flyers. Like, yeah, it was almost like a Mormon, but it was for Jose Urquidy.
Yeah.
Have you learned the love and light that Jose Urquidy could bring into your life? I think that was the start of the pamphlet. But I think you were saying that Urquidy should have been the game three starter, if I remember correctly. Regardless, he was great in that game. Your thoughts on what we've seen from Jose Urquidy in the Arizona series and then that great start against the Twins?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I was saying that he was the game three starter because for some reason, my brain had just erased the existence of Christian Javier from my memory entirely.
No, don't admit that.
But, don't take it back. No, but stand on it.
Look, I would love to stand on it, but there's not a realistic leg to stand on there that would justify me saying that Jose Urquidy and how awful he has been for the majority of the regular season, minus that start against Arizona, should have been the team's third starter. But did I believe that he should have been the next guy in the rotation? Absolutely. And the reason for that is mainly the experience that he has in the postseason, plus the fact that he showed he was capable of doing it in a pressure-packed environment in that last start against Arizona in the regular season, gave you some level of confidence that he should be able to pull out his best when it matters most. And that's something that he's consistently shown that he's capable of doing. And really on top of that, too, he is a pitcher who, for whatever reason, I believe that his stuff plays better in the postseason because of the fact that he is not going to needlessly let guys on base.
He
is not going to beat himself via walks, hit by pitches, all that stuff. Like, he is not going to needlessly put runners on base. If he gets beat by contact because dudes just slug their way out of a game, then that's going to happen. But he's not the type of guy where you're going to run him out there and you're going to have to pull him after two innings because he's walked five batters and just totally imploded on the mound. And when you have the sort of floor that Jose Urquidy, I believe, can give you, there's some sort of comfort and confidence in that, especially when that's the fourth guy in your rotation.
Absolutely. You mentioned the big game nature of Jose Urquidy. Let's hear from Dusty Baker right now when he first noticed Urquidy's clutch factor.
Well, you know, I first noticed Urquidy, you know, who I didn't know who he was in the World Series in 2019. And I was like, man, who is this dude out there? And, you know, I started noticing Urquidy at that time in that game in 2019, and I didn't know him. But, you know, he's a big game guy. He kept using the clock to his advantage to compose himself. And he scared me a few times because he was, like, down to 1 second or 2 seconds. And I'm like, come on, Urquidy. But, you know, he was outstanding.
I'm so upset you cut out the best part of that clip.
Where he was semi-racist.
Where he goes and says, yeah, because he's Mexican and Mexicans can throw their off-speed pitches over the middle of the plate.
Yeah.
Like,
I cut it out because I can't repeat the things he said and get away with it.
Or at least I'm
suspect that I can say the same things and get away with it.
It was just a very classic Dusty.
It was very Dusty.
I was upset that I didn't get to hear, you know, the Mexican guys, they can just throw it over the heart of the plate. And, you know, they're off speed. They can work with it. And I was just like, I was waiting to hear it. And unfortunately, we did not get to hear
it. It's very progressive from opposing hitters that they just let them throw stuff over the middle to help out the Mexican-born pitchers. So, yeah, that was a really weird comment from Dusty Baker, but I think we've come to expect that. But
I love that clip was what, like 30-something seconds?
Something like that.
I like how he spent about 20 of them being like, and listen, I had no idea who Jose Urquidy was.
This guy, quote Steve Smith, complete jag.
I had no idea. I was on my couch like, who's this guy? Did he win a contest?
Oh, he's Mexican. He probably throws it over the middle.
That's why he's throwing soft stuff over the middle. Yeah, I do. I mean, that's just one of my favorite Dustyisms is just him being like, I don't know who this guy is.
Yeah, he's completely honest about it.
Tyler
Glass now or Shane McClanahan?
It was McClanahan he was managing the All-Star game. He was on the podium next to the starter of the All-Star game who he was managing and being like, I don't even know who this guy is. Do we ever play him? And they did.
They did.
In
the postseason. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever played him.
All right. So getting back there to what Andrew's mentioned, what Dusty Baker mentioned, like the clutch gene for Jose Urquidy, and I think it leads to the point of why – despite what we saw in the regular season, despite the injury concerns that Urquidy has been plagued with, specifically his shoulder, why Astros fans, and I'll speak for myself as well, have so much confidence in Urquidy in these big moments. So, I mean, everyone remembers the 2019 World Series. I mean, as Dusty Baker hadn't even heard of him at that point. And he goes out there against the Nationals, throws five innings, two hits, no walks, no earned runs in a huge spot, helps get the Astros back into the series. Eventually they take the lead of the series and then AJ Hinch screws it up. Not that I remember that very well. 2021 World Series, again, very big. The Astros were dealing with a lot of pitching injuries against the Braves. He goes out there in game two, five innings, two earned runs, seven Ks. He had the mop-up duty last year in game three of the World Series when Lance McCullers just got destroyed. Urquidy went out there three innings, one hit, no earned runs, and just he's the professional pitcher. We have Michael Brantley, the professional hitter, and I'm going to call and label now Jose Urquidy the professional pitcher. I have a lot of faith right now in Jose Urquidy. It feels good because one of the things we said, or I said, going into the ALDS against the Twins, Andrews, it felt like game one was a win because if you didn't get the Verlander win, oh my God, what are we getting from everybody else? I think Urquidy showing what he did against the Diamondbacks and the Twins helped stabilize that. Like, if there is a hiccup with Fromber or Javier, you feel like the series isn't over.
Yeah, in general, you just have more trust in the starting rotation than you have had for the majority of the season. That's from the top down. Everybody outside of Fromber, you feel more comfortable with than you have for the majority of the season for whoever it was filling their rotation spots. Because at some points we were talking about, is Hunter Brown going to be the number three starter? Is J.P. France going to be the number three starter for this team? But now you have a decent level of comfort with guys 1, 3, and 4 in the rotation right now. And considering when you take a look around the rest of Major League Baseball with what's left, you can't be too upset with that being your outcome.
Yeah, That really is. I think we were talking about this while we were at Gulf Coast Chevy last week, where we felt like this is the first time the Astros didn't have like a clear starting pitching advantage, and where you're going to have to kind of like have some faith in what they got. And little, how easy we forget that Jose Urquidy, when it becomes October, just becomes a reliable pitcher, becomes an awesome, reliable postseason performer. And, you know, when you have a run like the Astros have had these last 7 years, I mean, going back to 2019, those World Series games, you need guys like Jose Urquidy who they just step up in big moments. When he gets called upon, he steps up, and that's what he did last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird to call Jose Urquidy a stopper, but he's kind of become a stopper.
So we were talking about on the Paul Gallant show today, this week.
Paul was on today?
Yeah, right before us.
It is sober October. He can get through Saturday shows now.
he was like, yeah, some of the best Jose Urquidy performances have been in the postseason. I was like,
pretty much what are the other?
That's all of them. In the regular season, he's just a regular pitcher. He's like a fifth starter in the regular season. And then in the postseason, he comes out and he just nails.
Brandon Backey.
Overall in the postseason.
I like it.
That's a good comparison. Backey was very similar. Yeah. I think it was game four of the 2005 World Series where he went out there and the White Sox eventually won 1-0 on a Jermaine Dye RBI. Single up the middle, but Backey went out there and pitched better than, you know, Roy Oswalt had the game before. So, and Urquidy, it bears out, not all of these are starts. He has some relief appearances as well, but overall in the postseason, 40 innings pitched, 40 strikeouts, 3.64 ERA. It's not elite. It's not Verlander at his absolute best, but he's very, very good.
And he's not starting game ones or game twos like Verlander. Yeah,
exactly. All right, there's more on the Astros. We're going to push the Texans back for one more segment. The Stroud boys will have to wait for one more segment. So when we get back, we're going to make our predictions for the Astros and Rangers series and talk about our biggest concerns and our advantages the Astros might have. That's next to the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. Oh, it's you people.
What do you mean, you people?
What do you mean, you people?
Huh?
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside the Bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait, who let those guys up here? Security? That's them right there. Right there.
Yeah, we haven't heard that rejoin too often, have we? Yeah, Spencer, thanks. Not Sam on Twitter, Spencer Tillman, bad teammate.
It has been a minute, I will say that.
We hadn't done a lot of shows. I mean, we did the show out at Gulf Coast Chevy. That I think this is the first time we've been in studio together since...
In a month.
Yeah, since maybe Colorado TCU week?
No.
Was it the week after? Oh, you're right. You guys weren't here that week.
I was making fun of the Nebraska quarterback, who's now been benched, by the way.
Okay, I think you're right. Anyway,
Andrew's giving me a hard time for being like, man, this Nebraska quarterback stinks.
Sean was hating on this poor guy for no reason other than he's not good at football.
He was terrible. 4 interceptions.
Yeah, Nebraska, not exactly quarterback you.
I will say, the last time we were here in studio all together, we were talking about like, wow. Look at Colorado. What a job.
Look at Colorado.
The tone of the way you say those words has changed drastically. Yeah. Maybe Deion won't get the Florida State job or whatever job he desires. He'll probably still be on the top of the most coaching list. But, certainly the bloom is starting to fall.
They're not
going to
have guys winning
bit.
The Heisman. I'll say that.
No. They've got, what, 3 losses now?
Yeah,
you're pretty much done, especially at Colorado. You're done. I mean, Alabama might get a guy, a Heisman, with 3 losses, but it's not going to happen at Colorado. All right, getting back into the Astros. I mean, Andrew, very impatient. Just giving me the wrap it up. It was like a Dave Chappelle thing. I was about to get the wrap it up light there from Andrew. He's like,
he's got a big hook that he's
Andrew's wanting to run no huddle offense. It's like, look, guys, we don't have a lot of time.
We're done talking
around.
About Colorado, all right?
Sometimes I like to get in the huddle, Andrew, talk things out, draw up the play, you know, see what happens. But all right, we'll go
Xavier
ahead.
Xavier Weaver, let me tell you about this guy.
We'll go ahead and move back on to the Astros.
All right, y'all talk about Colorado. I'll turn my mic off.
Donovan Edwards.
All right, now while Andrew's no. All right, let's go ahead and get back into the Astros. So before the segment's over, and we'll get into the Texans next segment, Mount Rushmore plus one to close the show. I want to get y'all's predictions on the series, but first question on this, kind of looking forward instead of looking back on what the Astros have done, Sean. What is, I mean, we talked about the Rangers offense, but where is the Astros' biggest advantage to you in this series? Obviously, I don't think it's starting pitcher versus opposing offense. Where do you think the Astros have the edge here?
It's the bullpens. Mm-hmm. It's the bullpens. The Texas Rangers bullpen is actually terrible. It is a bad bullpen.
Beyond just Chapman?
Beyond Chapman. Chapman's one of the better ones. The Rangers bullpen is why they didn't win this division by five games. The Rangers bullpen is very, very bad, and the Astros bullpen is what the Astros are best at. That is what the Astros' best part of the team is. It is the bullpen. It is Abreu. It is Presley.
Stressley, yeah.
He'll make you sweat.
He went to what, a three-ball count against all three?
All three,
and he struck out the side. He went to a three-ball count against
the
all
most
of them.
Stressful three, yeah. Three down, oh strike out the side. Yeah, but it is the bullpens. That's where the Astros really... on their lineups, kind of strategy should be to like take a lot of pitches and to. I just looked at the notes. Andrew, just read what you put in the notes. Listen, the Rangers bullpen stinks. The Astros should try to get to the bullpen as quickly as possible.
We got a Rodney Harrison quote.
So I'm just gonna take a page out of Rodney Harrison's book when he was talking about Zach Wilson after the Jets Chiefs Sunday Night Football game a couple of weeks ago. And when you look at the Rangers bullpen, Rodney Harrison, he said very similar things about Zach Wilson. When you watch the tape, you just got to say, this dude is garbage, man. this dude is trash, not good. Like that is what you get with the Rangers bullpen. The only question for the Astros is going to be, can you put together enough solid at-bats to where you're going to chase these guys after five or so innings without necessarily having a massive offensive output? Like, if you only get two or three runs, can you still chase these guys after five innings because you're consistently putting together quality at-bats that are forcing the pitch count up and are going to force their starters out of the game? Because if you're able to do that, I guarantee you 100% you're going to win the series. If you get to that Rangers bullpen on a consistent basis in the fifth and sixth inning, that pressure is going to tell, that dam is going to break, and the Astros are going to score a absolute massive amount of runs off their bullpen.
Can we get a 39-10 again in a three-game stretch?
I wouldn't say no.
You mentioned, you know, getting to the bullpen, and you're absolutely right. That is obviously the weakest part of the Rangers roster. I don't feel great about the Astros' ability necessarily, and I say this even though the Astros have once hit five home runs and a single inning off of this pitcher, but I don't feel great in their ability to knock Nathan Eovaldi out of the game quickly. He's been a horse. He's been someone that can go deep into games. I do feel great about their ability to get to this version of Max Scherzer, who will be coming into potentially a Game 3 start with no rehab start, and then Andrew Heaney, if he is the Game 4 starter, the Astros can crush him. I think this really hinges upon, not to put it all the eggs in the basket of game one again, what version of Jordan Montgomery is it? Because Montgomery is a guy who can go six, seven innings, one run. He lives out of the strike zone. He's a guy that tries to induce guys to chase. Altuve chases. We saw Yordan chase a lot in game four against the Twins. If the Astros are patient and can get to Jordan Montgomery, then I think they have the pitching advantage in game three and four as well. I think that really where is the series lies.
Yeah, Montgomery and Eovaldi are two very good pitchers to have at the top of your postseason rotation, because Nathan Eovaldi is just a postseason ace. We talked about Jose Urquidy being really good. Nathan Eovaldi has a similar resume of just absolute banger performances.
Career ERA in the postseason under three.
Exactly.
That doesn't sound ideal for the Astros.
And you talked about the time that the Astros roughed him up in September. He was coming back. He really rushed his rehab to come back, and because that's where the Rangers needed reinforcements anywhere they could. Astros roughed him up without a rehab start. Now they're going to have Max Scherzer starting probably game three or four of this series without a rehab start, just getting thrown straight to the wolves.
Before he even went on the IL, he was pitching really poorly.
Yeah, so the critical games are going to be games one and two of this series, where the pitching matchups are going to be as equal as possible, and that's where Andrew's point about getting the pitch counts higher on, especially a guy like Montgomery,
because he lives out of the zone. Like I can't remember who the announcer was, but he was, because I was watching it up here, and it was whenever it was their series against
the Orioles.
sorry?
The Orioles?
Yeah, the Orioles. And he was just pointing out that basically everything of Jordan Montgomery does is he starts a pitch on the corner that falls off, and if you chase it, you're probably, best case scenario, you swing and miss, because if you make contact, you're probably grounding it out to one of the infielders. So Altuve is going to swing at the first pitch every time. I think that we're just going to have to live. I say that as if it's a bad
live
thing.
Live with that.
Yeah, we're going to live with that
with the
because
guy who's
it's
hit
good.
The most home runs
right,
in postseason
exactly.
history.
Jordan Alvarez was swinging at a lot of balls in the dirt in the game four. Feels like the Twins found a little bit of a hole in his approach. I think who we're going to have to count on against Montgomery is Uncle Mike, because we know Uncle Mike is going to put the best swing on it. He's not going to chase a whole lot of pitches. And then Alex Bregman. If there's anybody on this Astros roster that's not going to chase Jordan Montgomery out of the zone, it's Alex Bregman. So it feels like this is a really weird thing to say, Andrew, but as Sean mentioned, you know, Eovaldi, Jordan Montgomery, clearly the best weapons the Rangers have in their starting rotation. If you can get a split at home between Eovaldi and Montgomery, you should, and I get it, future Hall of Famer, you should crush Scherzer and Andrew Heaney.
Steel road field advantage is what you're asking. You're asking the Astros to steal,
yes.
steal one at home.
If they steal either the Eovaldi or the Montgomery start, I think they'll be up 3-1 in the series going into Game 5.
Okay.
Because I think they're going to crush Scherzer, and I think they're going to crush Andrew Heaney.
Okay. So do you want to move into predictions now?
Yeah,
that was a nice segue into the...
I was kept waiting for Andrew to give me the hurry up.
Well, look, when you want to start talking about Shedeur Sanders again, then I'll get
so,
there.
Wait.
That interception was so bad that he threw a double overtime. I could not even...
Quickly, before we get into the predictions, is Travis Hunter's Heisman odds still alive? Do you have an update for us, Sean?
They're low.
High, okay.
Plus 10,000?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess there's nothing more to talk about
Colorado. Do you believe now?
No.
Do they still keep receipts when they blow 29-0 leads at halftime? Do they keep receipts of that? But let's get into the predictions in the last couple minutes we have here in this segment. Again, we'll talk about Texans in the next two and then get into our groundbreaking award-winning segment, Mount Rushmore Plus One, to close the show before Aggies football starts at 1:30. Andrew, at the risk of you hurrying me up, I'll ask for your prediction first. Astros, Rangers, ALCS, who wins the series?
The Astros win in six, and this isn't just because I will have tickets to Game 6 should we get there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've got a relative up in Dallas who's going to come down for the Game 6 if it gets to that point. So part of me selfishly would like to see it end in six so I can see them close it out and go to the World Series. But I just believe the Rangers lineup is going to be capable of winning a couple of games on their own throughout the course of the series. But the Astros' advantage from a pitching perspective, especially in the bullpen, is going to tell the longer the series goes. You see this so frequently in these seven-game series where the further along the series goes, the more and more important the bullpen becomes. And that's where the Astros' advantage is just going to loom larger and larger as we get through the game. So I like Astros in six.
Yeah, the nature of this Rangers team does make me believe that, like, yeah, their lineup is just going to kind of hop all over either Fromber or Christian Javier in one of these games.
Yeah.
Like, it's just hard to keep that good of an offense down for long when you have these starters that are prone to have these to give up these offensive explosions from the other team. So I do think that this will be a series that is going to be a close one. It's going to be tight. I actually wouldn't be shocked if the Texas, this is a prediction within a prediction now.
Oh.
The Rangers might lead this like
perception
2-1, but I do think as the Astros get more exposure to that Texas Rangers bullpen and see these pitchers more and more, I feel like that will kind of shift things into the Astros in seven, Astros in six, but I'll say Astros in seven to be different from Andrew. And so Andrew cannot watch the Astros win from the Diamond Club.
Wow, that is very... You're going to force a lot of stress on the city just so you can be vindictive against Andrew.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm here for it. I love that. I love the pettiness.
Yeah. I think Astros in seven, I think this is one where they, again, just the postseason medal kind of wins out.
Yeah, you have a lot. And not that the Rangers don't have anybody that's been there before. Simeon's been in playoff games.
Seager,
they've been in playoff games, but they haven't been in it at the level of the Astros. And quickly, before we go back to you, Andrew, Sean, you hit on something that I think is absolutely right. I think this could play out And I think there's a really good chance of this playing out basically like the Phillies World Series.
Yeah.
You're going to have a game where the Astros lead and the Rangers offense catches fire against your bullpen and bludgeons you and takes a game that the Astros should have won. You're going to have a start like Lance McCullers did in game three, where they hit a bunch of home runs and you lose 7-0. But then you're going to get to the other guys in the rotation Your offense is going to come through. The strength you have in their bullpen versus your bullpen is going to come through, and I will also take the Astros in six.
Yeah, I was going to say, Sean mentioned something there that brought up some memories of the 2021 ALCS versus the Boston Red Sox. You remember where they hit that stupid little cart that they kept wheeling guys around in after they hit grand slams, and they hit 80 grand slams or whatever it was in two consecutive games in that series. It seemed like every time the bases got loaded, the next pitch was leaving the yard.
And as someone who work the board in those games took 5.5 hours because
pre-pitch clock,
a million pitching changes, a million runs scored. Yeah, I think they've hit like two grand slams in both of the first two games of the series.
And then the Astros won 4-2. So that's something where I could totally see it playing out, sort of like you talked about, where the lineup's going to get hot for a couple of games and win those games on their own, but the Astros' advantages elsewhere across the rest of the roster will eventually show.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the good news is that they're going to give us content. They're going to give us enough stressful, bad games.
Best thing,
yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, they'll give us content, but still win. Because
I'm sure all the people in their cars right now, as we're talking about, like, this is going to be a heavyweight fight. You're going to pop some Pepsi, pop some Pepto Bismol. They're like, well, at least the guys are going to have content.
Hey,
this
look,
week.
I've always been a hashtag team content.
I'm going to be sweating for 10 straight days.
All right, hey, just giving us the wrap it up sign. We got to get
the
break.
That's the hashtag sign. I thought
that was you looking at your
watch.
Yeah,
I thought you were giving us the caller spray, like, time to wrap it up. Andrew just wants us to get out of this time. He's really dying to talk Houston Texans. And we will do that next in the bullpen when we return to ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're hooked up with it.
You hooked up with it. You decided to marry it. I told you I wasn't into it. You said it didn't matter.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into The Bullpen, Houston, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. You can find us all on Twitter. I am at SackByBMAC. Andrew Carlson can be found at Carlson Radio. Sean Mapes from The Paul Gunlon Show is at Sean A. Mapes. And, of course, our man behind the glass at Third Coast Johnny. And Johnny Bilmer, I'm going to put you in the spot. I just realized we didn't go to you for your prediction of the ALCS. What you got in the ALCS? Astros win, Rangers win, how many games?
I'm with Sean. I think it's Astros in seven here.
I don't like the negativity.
I would have loved him to go like Rangers in five.
Yeah, well,
Sean just doesn't want to see the Astros advance in person. That's all Sean.
I was going to say six until he said he had tickets to game six in the Diamond Club. So I was like,
you know what? Screw you, Andrew. Seven.
You know what? You got to see them win the World Series in six last year. You don't get that much joy in your life.
Am I wrong?
You can always use more joy,
should
Sean.
Should you have more joy in your life?
Yes, you should always have more
Embrace
joy.
Debate.
Embrace
more,
debate. Yeah,
more
that's
or
cute.
Less joy for Andrew Carlson.
713.
Yes.
Yeah. And speaking of which, we're about to talk Texans. If you do have a thought or any comments on the Astros or the Texans here, give us a call on the HRMP listener line as we embrace debate at 713-780-3776. So I guess debate topic number one. The Texans' rushing offense has just been awful this year. I don't see a way that they're going to be able to run the ball against the Saints in this matchup. The Texans are tied for last in the league in yards per attempt at 3.0. It's just an abysmal number. While the Saints' rush defense ranks 10th in yards allowed, has allowed under 4 yards per carry and only one rushing touchdown. This feels like a game where... And this could lead into maybe the Texans getting too cute, and this kind of a double-edged sword where if they do it and it works, we'll say, oh, good job being creative. If they do it and it doesn't work, we'll say they got too cute. But this feels like a game where Bobby Slowick, Sean, is going to have to be creative in the running game. It probably gets C.J. Stroud a little bit involved in the running game if you're going to have success on the ground.
I mean, yeah.
Not necessarily design runs, but tell CJ, yeah, hey, okay.
You scared me, B-Mac. Yeah, we're going to run CJ Stroud on the option.
It's not RG3.
Look, as a Longhorns fan, I never wanted to see another speed option in my life. I've seen how that goes for quarterback shoulders. Pour one out for Colt McCoy and his dad on the field. But I don't want to see the design runs for CJ Stroud, but the Saints have been a team that relies on just getting pressure with their front four, dropping eight. The Falcons did that a lot against the Texans as well. If that opens up, run the ball.
Yeah.
Slide down.
Yeah.
Pick up 5 yards, avoid the negative play.
As a scrambler, CJ should start thinking about getting more involved in this matchup because of, like you said, there's normally not much for the Texans on the ground. Not much there. And this game, there's probably going to be even less there. I was wondering when you said, like, speaking of debate, that Texans rushing offense.
I was just trying to carry over.
I thought the debate was, are they terrible or are they awful? I thought that was going to be the debate.
That feels like a Stephen Colbert line there.
They should not try to establish it. I'll say that. They should just lean into, listen, you can run the ball sometime because you can't literally throw the ball every play. But I wouldn't be starting Damian Pierce in fantasy football.
No.
This is some free advice.
Yeah, Damian Pierce, I think, in fantasy, just a quick aside, I think, is only going to be valuable in games where you expect him to be up big. And the Saints defense isn't good enough, or is too good to allow the Texans to get up big. I mean, Andrew, what are your thoughts on this Texans' run game, the struggles they've had? I know people at the station, I think it was Josh Beard, who basically calling to borrow the Steve Smith line, calling Damian Pierce a jag before the season. I mean, where do you sit with this running game? Is it you see it as the Damian Pierce isn't getting the job done? Is the offensive line struggles, or do you not like some of the play calls? What can the Texans do to make this run game at least a little bit better, at least average? They're dead last, again, in yards per carry.
I mean, this is an incredibly fence-sitting answer here, but it's a little bit of everything that you just said. All of those are elements of what's going on here. If you think that Damian Pierce is doing the utmost with the blocking that he's getting thus far, then I'm sorry, but you're just not watching the same film that everybody else is watching, because Damian Pierce has opportunities to make certain cuts and reads that he's just not currently doing. But on top of that, it at least in my opinion, it feels like he is so eager to hit some holes sometimes because he's not getting them as frequently because the offensive line isn't blocking it as well, that he's almost over eager to try and hit a hole or to try and make something happen.
He's not allowing the blocks develop.
Yeah, like there are it's a multifaceted issue with the run game right now, and it's forcing the Texans to rely on the pass game. The problem is the Saints defense is probably going to be the best defense the Texans play all year. I believe this is going to be the toughest challenge that the Texans, from an offensive perspective, face for the remainder of the season. The only team that I think will really come close is the Browns.
The Jets. Jets have a good defense still.
The Jets have a good defense as well, but the Saints are top five in almost every
single
category.
Yeah, they're really good. They're really good.
The Saints have they have the fourth best total defense overall. They have the third best or fourth best scoring defense. They're third in third down conversions. So it's just everything that the Texans have struggled with so far this season, the Saints are going to be able to capitalize on that in terms of what they do well on the defensive side of the football. So Bobby Slowick is going to have to be very creative on Sunday if the Texans want to have a chance at winning, and even more so because of the fact that Tank Dell's not going to be there. So there are a lot
Change
of things going against the Texans in this game, and it would be a massive, massive boon if they were able to get the ground game going. I just don't realistically see a way that all of a sudden, after it's been a very slow plodding affair on the ground for the team first 5 weeks of the season, that magically against a really good defense that's going to be able to key in on the run because they can trust their secondary, that they're going to be able to get that done.
At least I think, and as you mentioned, it's kind of a bit of everything. The offensive line, Damian Pierce, the play calling. Specifically with the play calling, I hope we never see another toss play with Damian Pierce, because when they do succeed running, it's between center and guard. It's the power run game. That's what Damian Pierce is. He's an explosive power game runner. He's not someone that you toss, you know, a play or toss it out wide to, and I hope he can either get the edge or find the cutback lane like an Arian Foster would. He's just not that guy.
Yeah, that's I think part of the issue. I mean, it's definitely so. The main issue is blocking. That is the main issues with the Texas run game.
Offensive line's been patchwork all season.
But Damian Pierce does not help his blockers out very much. But just because it's not he's a bad running back. It's not that he's a jag. It's just the style that in which he runs is not conducive to the Shanahan Bobby Slowick offense.
Right.
That the system that he's
being put
in.
And they drafted him before, obviously. That's the offense
he
got
wasn't,
put
he
in.
He wasn't drafted to fit into this offense. So it is two things happening at once there. And now with those struggles against anybody, now you have a good rushing defense coming into town. It's not going to be an easy day for the Texans offense.
And I think we're going to have some frustrating days watching the Texans coming up, because as long as this run game struggles, and I know they have the bye next week. I can't remember if the first game out of the bye is Carolina or Tampa Bay. Carolina, they should be able to run on. Carolina's terrible against the run. But Tampa's another good run defense. I mean, the NFC South division has several good rush defenses, Tampa and the Saints included. Atlanta not bad as well. But what we saw against Atlanta feels like it would be very easily repeatable by New Orleans, where they were able to stop the run and get a pass rush with basically four. Yeah. New Orleans has a great front four. And then drop eight and basically challenge Stroud to make tight window throws and take, you know, kind of the underneath stuff, because he can't push the ball down the field. And that's going to lead to, I think, some frustrating watching of games on the offensive side of the ball for the Texans.
Yeah, because teams can stop the Texans running attack with a light box. Like, they don't have to commit to the run to stop the run, which is very bad. Because then, like you said, they can do the Atlanta Falcons defense, drop seven, drop eight into coverage, make life harder on a rookie quarterback. They can disguise a lot of pressures. They can do a lot of things there that really are going to make life so hard for C.J. Stroud that, I mean, I think this might be the day he throws his first interception.
I agree.
I know that's heresy to say that C.J. Stroud might throw an interception at this point, but with how Dennis Allen runs this defense,
he should have thrown one last week. Jesse Bates had one in the hands.
100%. So I do think that this is going to be the game where we're still excited about C.J. Stroud, but this is going to be, I believe, more of a rookie-type showing. What you expect to see, the tough games, the growing pains from a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, especially as Andrew mentioned, without Tank Dell in, the offense changes quite a bit. Yeah. Dalton Schultz suddenly got involved. I don't think it's a coincidence. It was after Tank Dell went out with the concussion. Both guys kind of work. I know Tank has obviously played on the outside as well, but Tank and Dalton Schultz kind of play a similar role. They're kind of the outlet, the short, the intermediate, over the middle of the field. Difference is Tank can take that and break a tackle and make a big play out of it.
Jackson.
Dalton Schultz is just going to fall down, you know, basically where he catches the ball.
Okay, okay.
All right, into the Dalton Schultz slander
segment. He doesn't run a 4-3.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to say it. Dalton Schultz, just a guy. He's a jack. Oh. There we go. I said it. Oh. All right. Shout out to Steve Smith. We're not going to get to that at the end of the show, but what a lunatic that guy is. So I think that really is where the game lies, because I think that the Saints offense doesn't really worry me all that much. Michael Thomas doesn't have the same explosion. Alvin Kamara doesn't have the same explosion. Chris Olave is a great down the field threat, but he's had an ankle problem and Derek Carr's shoulder's been banged up. So I don't really trust that they can get the ball down the field. So it's really, can you not turn the ball over on offense, which is dumb and cliche to say, but it's true. And, you know, can they actually get some explosion plays against the Saints defense that will try to take that away? But quickly, before we go to break, let's make our picks on the game. Sean, Texans, Saints, what you got?
I think the Texans dropped this one. As we talk, I thought it was a little toss-uppy, but as we talked about it, the struggles that they're going to have moving the ball, I can't pick the Texans in this one. I think it will be a close one because the Saints aren't like that good. Their offense struggles.
It feels like a game you should take the under for sure, yeah, which is at 42 and a half.
Since Derek Carr's come back from his injury, he just hasn't been any good because he can't throw the ball because he has hurt shoulder.
2 weeks ago, Alvin Kamara, 13 catches for 33 yards.
It's exactly.
Dink and dunk. Yeah. Andrew, what you got?
Texans 19, Saints 17.
Yeah.
Texans defense gets the job done. The NRG crowd shows up a little bit, and they're able to hold the hobbled Derek Carr in that Saints offense enough to let the Texans offense get something going to get those 19 points.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way.
Kyemi Fairbairn, big game.
Yeah, I mean, he had four field goals. Yes, exactly. He had four field goals last week. I think he's going to be online for something like that, too. I agree with Andrew. I'll go just to keep it a little bit different, 2014 Texans. I think it's an ugly game, but the Texans win, and I would definitely, if you're making a bet, the bet is the under. All right, coming up next in the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. We've got two segments left. We'll close the show with the groundbreaking award-winning segment, Mount Rushmore Plus One. But next, There's been a lot of I can't even say this word. What did
superlatives.
I try to say? Thank you, Sean. I don't see that. There was self-scouting that I need to do. I knew right ahead of time I wasn't going to be able to say that word cleanly when I was trying to get through it fast, and I tried to go for it anyway. Anyway, a lot of nice things have been said about C.J. Stroud, and we're going to dive into some of those next in the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com on the Chase Long.
On the Chase Long, on the Chase Long, on the Chase Long, all day long, on the Chase Long.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.